Hello, Alex Zane here. Thank you for choosing to listen to Just the Facts. And while you can still enjoy these episodes forever, you might want to check out our brand new show, A Trip to the Movies, where each week a different famous film fan curates their perfect night out at the cinema, picking what snacks they'd eat, where they'd sit, who they'd go with, and of course, what movies they'd screen. If you love cinema as much as we do, search A Trip to the Movies with Alex Zane or head to our socials at Trip to Movies Pod. That's at Trip to Movies Pod to find out more.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Alex.
Robbie, how are you, mate?
Good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. A lovely sunny day. Where are you? Los Angeles?
I'm in Toronto. It looks sunny, and I guess it is, but it's cold and miserable.
Oh, yeah? I like Toronto. Toronto's a beautiful city. It's cold and miserable in London. I think we have similar weather. It's doing a good impression of Raccoon City, actually, at the moment, London. It's dark. It's foreboding. But
perfect.
But, yeah, it looks nice where you are. Hey, so... a lot to talk about with your new movie, Resident Evil. Two words, when put together, recognized the world over. When did you first hear the words Resident Evil?
Oh, I played the original game. I'm born in 88, so I was 8 years old when it came out in 96. And I was probably a little too young to be playing it, but I played hockey and I played video games. That was pretty much my childhood. So, one of my earliest video game memories was playing in the basement in the dark and dogs jumping through the window and scaring the living hell out.
I remember that. It's weird. And it's a testament to this film that watching the movie, I was flashing back to how terrifying that game was. Because wasn't there a bit where you didn't know what you were doing at the start. So you could open the front door. But the minute you opened the front door, two hellhounds stuck their head round and like barked the shit out of you.
Yeah, I mean, the game has so many visceral moments that like stuck with me, probably because I was too young to be playing it. But like, it also tells you why the franchise is so globally, you know, recognized and beloved.
Yeah, I mean, you were young to be playing it, 8 years old. So I'm a little bit older than you. So I was about 15 when I was playing it. I remember it scared the hell out of me. Did you have nightmares?
I don't know. I'd have to ask my parents, but I sure as hell remember the dogs jumping through the window. But I liked that stuff when I was a kid. So probably not a great idea to have been playing it, but what are you going to do?
Because it was, I don't think any of us expected it, did we? Because it was one of the first like survival horror games that actually chilled you to the bone. Like before that, you know, we were jumping around playing Mario, like running around colorful worlds. And then this game comes along and it just changed everything.
Yeah, it did. And it's a little bit, you know, if you really look at it, you might be able to attribute the, you know, comeback of zombies into pop culture to Resident Evil. Like, they were big before that, obviously, with like the Romero movies and stuff like that. But Resident Evil, if you really look at the dates and the time, like, they kind of brought zombies back to the mainstream. And but it was definitely the first of its kind. It was the first video game I can remember that was like, you know, it's an action game, but it's a horror game.
Mm. Yeah. And considering like how closely this film, the new movie, resembles the plot of both Resident Evil and Resident Evil 2, did anyone like dust off an old console for you? Like, go, look, remember this? This was a PlayStation, just so you could like relive the game.
Well, great thing is, you know, I could play Resident Evil 2 remastered on PC just because it was an easy buy. And I did. I ripped around for a little while. I played a little bit of Resident Evil 1. It's got the like PS5 backwards compatibility thing. And it's difficult. Like, it's, the controls are dated. There's a lot of like turning around when you don't mean to turn around. Games have come a long way, but it was cool to play 1 and 2 because the sets and the production design in the movie are unbelievably accurate. I mean, Johannes Roberts, our director, went to Capcom and asked for the blueprints to the Spencer Mansion and the police station, and he nailed it. Like, the first time I was standing in the front entrance of the Spencer Mansion, I was a kid again. It was awesome.
I bet. Did you ever get round to playing Resident Evil? God, I think it was maybe 7 or something. It was called Resident Evil Biohazard. It was the one that came on the VR headset, so you were actually in the game.
I have an Oculus, like a Quest 2 here, and they just sent me a code for Resident Evil 4 VR, so I'm excited to rip into that. The only one I played that was like VR, but it wasn't VR, was there was one on, I think it was GameCube, that had a gun that connected to the console. And I think I ripped through that game in 2 nights. Like, it wasn't the most challenging, but it was a blast because it was new and fresh and something different.
Man, I don't know what Resident Evil 4 on the VR is like, but Biohazard scared the shit out of me. Like, to the point where I had to stop playing. It was one of those. It was almost too much, but it was great. So as well as the games, though, like Resident Evil obviously has been on our big screens for like the last 15 years at the hands of Paul W.S. Anderson and Mila Jovovich. 6 movies, the last of which came out in 2016. Did you watch any of those movies either before or after finding out about this remake?
I've seen every one. I'm a big fan. I think Mila Jovovich is amazing. My buddy Sean Roberts played Wesker in those movies.
Oh, yeah.
He played my older brother in my first movie I ever did. He's a great friend, and I loved watching, you know, him crush it in those movies. And I think those movies are amazing. I think what's really cool for us is our movie is totally different. It's actually, you know, an adaptation of Resident Evil 1 and 2. I think it's the movie that the fans of the games have been waiting for. And I'm excited for everybody to see it. I mean, if you grew up playing the games, you're going to lose your mind when you watch this movie.
So when did you first hear about it, that they were planning this remake of Resident Evil, a reboot of the entire series? Was it a meeting? Was it a phone call? Did they send someone dressed as a zombie around to your house holding a contract?
I got back to Toronto with my wife and our son, who was 1 at the time or almost 1. And we were quarantining up at her parents' place because it was right in the middle of COVID.
Sure.
And my agent phoned me out of the blue and he was like, "Hey, I've been talking to Resident Evil about you." I didn't even know they were doing a Resident Evil. I was just in dad mode at that point. And he was like, "I've been talking to Resident Evil about you. I'm going to send you the script. If you like it, meet with the director." And I was like, "Set the meeting with the director." He's like, "You don't want to read it?" I'm like, "Oh no, I'll read it. But like, I'm in, I know." And, you know, I read it. And the great thing about it was the version of the movie I was hoping for as a fan of the games. And then I had a Zoom meeting with Johannes and we just geeked out for an hour talking about the games and the tone of the movie and what he wanted to bring to it, what he thought was important from a continuity standpoint of the games to the movies. and where he could take some liberties. And, you know, after talking with him, I had so much confidence in the project and in him in making the film. I was super pumped on it. And at the end of the call, he was like, "Well, I'd love to make this movie with you. So hopefully I'll see you soon." And I was like, "Okay." And I hung up and I walked out to my wife and I was like, I think I got it. And she's like, "What?" I'm like, "I don't know. It was really, I don't know." And sure enough, I was the guy. And, you know, I loved working with Johannes. I loved working with the cast. And it was just kind of a dream come true for me.
Because he's been very clear, like, about how he wanted to really, like you said yourself, go back to the scares and the horror element of the original game. Did he give you any homework? As in, like, look, have a look at these movies. You might have seen them already, but these are the kind of movies that are going to inspire the way I want to make this film.
Well, I mean, we talked about the tone on our original meeting. He didn't give me any specific movies, but he was like, "Hey, man, if you want to go back and play the games, like, you're going to really enjoy the version of the movie we make." And so I did that. I played through one and two a little bit and really just, you know, kind of just kept talking with him and figuring out what, you know, what was important and what were the big moments. And I thought what he did really well was, if you just port the games over to a movie, it wouldn't really work. There's not enough there. So I thought what was really impressive was how he took the characters and he took things about the games that people love. And then he added that connective tissue and these relationships between these characters and made them human beings and gave them flaws and made them so that you can watch them and see yourself in their reflection rather than just, you know, kind of a little bit more of a one-dimensional video game character. Mm. And I think that's why, you know, everything else matters so much while you're watching it.
I mean, he's done some great character work in the past. I don't know whether you saw his shark movie, 47 Meters Down.
Yeah.
Okay. So my biggest fear is sharks. I have a shark tattooed on my wrist to remind me never to go in the sea, because that's my biggest fear. So that scared the life out of me. Did the sharks make your list of top three biggest fears? Are you cool with sharks?
I'm not cool with sharks. I don't know. Like, people swimming with sharks is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. I'll go swimming in the ocean, but I'm not going deep, and I'm sure as hell not going in the ocean where people are throwing food to the sharks to try and go swimming with them. That's not my style. But I grew up on Jaws. Well, I mean, I didn't grow up on Jaws, but I grew up watching movies like Jaws, and that took sharks out of the program for me.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, you make a really valid point, though. I think the thing is that, like, with this idea of chumming to bring sharks in so that tourists can experience them, what you're doing is making the sharks closer to shore and also desensitizing them to the idea of, like, oh, maybe I don't know what a human is. I might stay away. They're coming in. They're like, hey, food and humans go hand in hand now.
No, thank you.
So what are some of your biggest fears? You're in, like, you know, one of the biggest horror franchises on the planet. What scares you?
Oh, man. all the stuff that scares me is, like, really dark. Like, it's just real stuff, like health problems and, like, boring stuff. Like, now that I'm a dad, I'm like, the stuff that scares me is, like, not even fun to talk about. It's just, like, really dark and shitty. But, like, you know, the sillier things that scare me are things like, you know, sharks. My wife is legitimately afraid of open water. We went snorkeling once and it was like, just keeping an eye on her of like, don't freak out. Everything's fine. And she handled it really well. It was a trip to Oman and luckily we had great people with us and took care of it. But there was a moment where I was like, oh, this could go really, really south really quickly.
Robbie, man, I'm totally with your wife. I think there are actually sharks off Oman, and I would not go snorkeling there. You probably didn't tell her that.
No, I did not.
Yeah, I'm the guy who I if I go any further than maybe about 5 meters off the beach, I have to, and it's, this is pretty dark, but I have to make sure there are other people nearer.
So like, you don't have to. So exactly. You don't have to be the fastest. You just don't. You can't be the slowest.
I'm never going to be the fastest, but I'm out thinking the other people in the sea. I'm like, they'll go first.
You know where you should go, because my wife, being afraid of sharks in open water, but loves like aquariums and underwater like sea life. We went to the Georgia Aquarium in Atlanta, and you can swim in the big aquarium. And there are sharks in there, but they don't go anywhere near you. And they're not man eaters, but they have 4 whale sharks swim around the top. And there's no danger with whale sharks. They only eat krill, but it's one of the most spectacular experiences ever. So as somebody who is not going to go in the water, scuba diving or snorkeling, mm-hmm. make that a bucket list trip for you.
That's a great idea. I hope I can do it. I mean, I won't lie. Even that sounds a little bit scary. I, you know, I can't have bubbles in the bath because I need to be able to see the bottom in case a shark comes up. So we're talking like, you know, this is next level fear, but that sounds awesome. And did you say you've done that, or you did that with your wife, or you've done it?
We did that. Yeah. The two of us did it. She had a freak out at first, and then everything was okay. But like, the weird thing is we did the snorkeling, not the scuba diving, because you can go down and swim with them. But like, they literally told us, they're like, all the whale sharks stay at the top and just do figure eight. So just do that. And you're just going around the tank, and these whale sharks come floating up to you and they bump you, and then they keep going. But like, they're the most dinosaur looking things you've ever seen. It was really cool.
All right. That's my bucket list. That's number one. I've not had a bucket list till now, but you know, with there my fear go. Of sharks, that's a good one. Now, I'm right in thinking Raccoon City from the movie. You actually were back in your home country. There was a town, an old mining town called, was it Sudbury?
Sudbury, Ontario. I used to go there when I was a kid for hockey tournaments. It's about 3.5 hours north of Toronto. We used to have bus trips out there, a lot of hockey there. It's, you know, nothing against Sudbury, but it was perfect for Raccoon City. Part of that is just the time of year. I mean, you go anywhere in Ontario in November, December, and it's, you know, most of the time it's pretty gray and everything's dying and you get some rain, and you know, it's not an especially beautiful place to be. In the summer, I'm sure it's gorgeous. They got a bunch of lakes. It wouldn't look quite like Raccoon City. So did the part for us, but nothing against Sudbury.
How weird was that for you, though? So you were going there as a kid to return there in a massive Hollywood movie, like with a lead role in it. That must have been, was that some sort of weird nostalgia, sort of memory lane trip?
No, I mean, the thing for me was when I went on bus trips to Sudbury as a kid, like, or for hockey trips, it was always on a bus. I was young enough that I wasn't watching the road or like, we were just hanging out, watching movies in the back of the bus. And then I existed from the hotel to the hockey rink. You know, it was normally a game around 6 or 7 or 8 in the morning, and then a second game around 3 or 4 PM and then back to the hotel. It was like hotel, rink, food, hotel, rink, food. So I didn't have much of a Sudbury experience. So this time around, you'd think it would be a little different, but it was COVID. So my life was hotel, soundstage, hotel, location shoot, hotel. So I still don't know what's going on in Sudbury.
Oh, so you never got, I wondered if you had that moment, you know, where like, you know, as a kid, you're like, I'm going to, you know, should I do acting? Should I do hockey? I love both. What decision do I make? And then to have chosen acting and to return to the scene of your hockey match and go, look, I made the right choice.
No, I mean, I never thought of acting as a career. When I was a kid, my mom got me into like print work and little Sears catalogs and stuff like that for little commercials and just stuff, because I was comfortable in front of a camera and I could put a little money aside for, you know, whether it be college or at the time it was like my sister and I needed a retainer or some kind of dental work. It was like not covered by the health plan. So, you know, that was where it came from. So, you know, I never thought of acting as a career. I never thought I would go to the NHL. I was pretty self-aware for a young kid. And I knew that, in Canada, you've got a pretty good idea if you have a pathway to the NHL from like 12 years old. So, you know, one of the guys I played with ended up going to the NHL. But other than that, everybody kind of found their other thing. And then summer before 11th grade, out of nowhere, my modeling agent phoned me with an audition for Cheaper by the Dozen 2 to play Eugene Levy and Carmen Electra's son. And I just happened to look the part and quit hockey and took it as my foot in the door, and still had no idea if it was something that was going to work out for me, but I figured this was my chance, so I might as well give it a shot. And luckily it's worked out, because I still don't know what I would do.
But there was, were there not some nice, I guess if you're a believer in like, you know, fate, there was on Cheaper by the Dozen 2, you had no lines when you got the part, but by the end of the movie, they'd given you some lines.
Yeah, they gave me a few lines. I mean, the big thing was, it was like the two families, right? So it was, I had to audition with fake sides. They were lines from like Tom Welling's character or something in the movie. And then really it came down to a look thing. They wanted all the kids to look like they were, you know, fairly similar. And the great thing was for me was I was the tallest kid. So I was always standing beside Eugene Levy, and he just tried to make me laugh every day, like right before they yelled action, because he thought it was funny if I was holding up production. And I just learned a ton. I really enjoyed the people that I was working with. And I just kind of was like, you know what? This is an opportunity. Let me give it a shot. If it doesn't work, who cares? You know, it doesn't change anything. And if it does work, maybe I can run with this. And I ended up booking Life with Derek, which was a Canadian show that played on the Disney Channel that ended up, you know, getting pretty big for what it was, and got me enough to, you know, get my visa and go to LA. And looking back at it, now that I have a son, it feels like a big deal, because I would be like, what do you, you know, you can't just do that. But my parents were super supportive. We didn't have much money, so I just banked as much as I could and moved out there and tried to, you know, live as inexpensively as I possibly could, and ate a lot of Subway sandwiches, and luckily, you know, it went okay.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Yeah, I'll say. But you went back to Toronto, though. You didn't fancy staying out in LA, living in LA. You wanted to be back, I guess, where your roots are?
No, I lived there since 2007. First few gigs brought me back to Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver. But then I was like, you know, I had a place there since 2008. And my wife and I had our son September of 2019. And COVID hit right after. And we spent a little time in LA, then we came home to visit family, and then that became a much longer trip than we thought it would. And then my show shoots in Vancouver, my wife's show shoots in Vancouver, so it was a lot of time in Canada. COVID kind of changed the landscape of having to live in LA as an actor, and we figured, you know, we can be closer to family and raise our son here, but at the same time, we kind of go where the work is. So until he's of the age where he needs to, you know, set up roots in a school, it's kind of like, okay, well, we can figure this out wherever we go. So it's Toronto, it's Vancouver, it's LA, it's wherever the work is.
I mean, I love Toronto. It's a really beautiful city. I weirdly enough, considering what we're talking about, my experience of Toronto is A, it's absolutely freezing in winter, and B, it was the strangest experience. I shot George Romero's Land of the Dead. I played a zombie in George Romero's fourth Dead movie, which shot in Toronto. And it was the coldest I've ever been, 2 a.m. in December in Toronto. And the funny thing was, and I wonder if you had to do this on Resident Evil. We had to hold our breath, like as a zombie, because obviously zombies are dead, and you're sort of shuffling towards the cast, and they're like, just make sure you hold your breath, otherwise we're going to have to remove the breath, and we don't have the budget to remove the breath.
You know, most of our zombies are interior scenes. There's not a ton of exterior zombie fights. It's like in the police station, it's in the mansion, it's in the, you know, so maybe they did, but I don't remember it being a big thing, but it makes a lot of sense. Like, you can't have a horde of zombies coming over with a cloud of exhaust coming out.
So you're playing Chris Redfield in the movie, who literally didn't even show up, I don't think, till movie number 4 in the previous franchise. Yes. When Wentworth Miller shows up in a sort of, it's, I mean, he's great in it, but it's sort of like that weird homage to Prison Break. You're like, he's in a prison and he was in Prison Break, but here he is. So how do you get yourself into the headspace of a character like that? Is there something you put on? Is there something, you know, I understand it's a video game character, but like you said, you're fleshing them out while honoring the character themselves.
Yeah, a big thing for me was, you know, if you pull the character straight from the video game, he's a little bit flat. It would be, you know, this small town super cop who's by the book, and it's not a very human character. It's a video game. And I love Chris Redfield. I've played as him. I've pretended to be him while I'm playing, you know. I was a kid, and the big thing I spoke to with Johannes, which was not only for Chris, was for all the characters, was finding, you know, that balance of the game mixed with a grounded reality and a human version of this character. And I think a nice thing about Chris is you see this guy who's kind of a small town hero, but, you know, he's got regrets and the way that he handled things with his sister. And he doesn't have much of a family left anymore. And he's, you know, he's not a happy guy. He's a little bit angry. He's a little bit hurt, and he's defensive when you first meet him. But he still has that, you know, wants to help everybody, wants to be the hero. And you get to see him build that relationship back up with Claire and try and, you know, try and make things right. And I think the nice thing about that is people can see themselves in that character. It's a little more, you know, multidimensional, while still staying true to, I think, you know, a version of the character from the games.
Well, I guess that's the interesting thing, is it? When you say staying true to a version of the character from the games, because, you know, stranger to playing characters that have an existing fan base, you know, from the Arrowverse, you know, Firestorm/Deathstorm in The Flash. How does taking on a character like Chris Redfield compare to, say, Firestorm?
There's a lot of similarities. I think, you know, with Firestorm, there have been more iterations or more, he's been better documented through comic books. There's more to pull from. You know, a lot of the Chris Redfield stuff is like Resident Evil Wiki and stuff like that. And, you know, the games too, from 96, you know, video games weren't like novels back then, or like comic books. It was, most of the game was being played as Chris. The cutscenes are very short and there's not a whole lot, you know, in them. So I think it's just making sure that, at least for me, as a fan of the games, making sure that what I'm doing still feels accurate to the character I grew up, you know, playing as and watching, well, building out some stuff that works for the movie. And that's where you take the liberties and you hope that, you know, it's something that people get behind. And I think the nice thing was, Johannes is so passionate about the games and is such a fan. We were on the same page when we were talking about it. You know, we weren't taking any weird, wild swings with the character. It was like, this is a real guy. And, you know, he gets scared when there are zombies, but he's trained. And that's when, you know, muscle memory and reflexes kick in. But at the same time, you know, if you're playing the video game, you know, there's a zombie coming, you know what you're getting into. you know, Chris Redfield in the movie has never seen a zombie before. The first time this happens, this is something new. This is something weird. And this is something really messed up. And getting to play with that is really cool.
Although, like, I think it is almost a shot for shot remake of the game. The first time you see a zombie is the turnaround zombie from the video game.
Yeah. It's so good. That was the first, shot I shot with a zombie. It was my first zombie scene in the movie, which was great because it's my first zombie scene in the video game. But like that moment of the white coat just turning back around. So awesome. And I like that there's fear there because it's a messed up situation, but you know, it was fun.
I mean, obviously, you know that you're, like you say, you're on a movie set, you've got actors playing the zombies. Do you still, like, sometimes, like, in the dark of Spencer Mansion, do you get the heebie-jeebies when you see all these stunt people dressed as zombies?
No, I mean, there's so many people around, and, like, in between takes, they're like, your zombie's drinking a Coke. It's like, yeah. It just kind of sucks the fear out of it. Watching a movie is way scarier than making a movie. The great part about the zombies were, you know, most of the time they were stunt players. So they were stunt men and women who were there to, you know, go for it with the action, which was great because, you know, the zombies in the game are pretty slow. Ours aren't 28 days later fast, but they're no slouch. So I think what was really cool was finding that middle ground of like staying true to the games as far as the zombies go, but also, you know, heightening a little bit, making them a little scarier, a little faster, a little more dangerous.
I guess they would have to be stunt people because you get into some close quarters action with these zombies. And weirdly, like true to the game, whereas Claire is great with firearms, Chris is great at taking damage. And there are some situations where you're like, oh man, is he going to get out of that?
I don't know. I look like I die a few times in this movie, for sure. I barely get out.
So what was it like? Was it choreographed? It must have been choreographed, some of the fight scenes. Did you pick up any injuries in those?
I had a really nice gash after when I'm at the bottom of the stairs and the three zombies kind of swarm me and I'm holding them back. One of them got a fingernail into my arm and it was about that long, but I had so much fake blood on me. You couldn't tell until I washed up that day. And I was like, oh boy. And I had a nice scar. It's just faded in the last little while, but it was about that long from there to there. And it was nice. It was a little chunk out of my arm, which was my only battle wound. Other than that, I mean, everything was choreographed. It was always choreographed. The fight scene in the dining room with the MP5 and the 9mm, I had LED lights on the end of the gun that lit up the fight scene, which was just kind of a dream come true for me from an action standpoint. And we choreographed that thing. It was myself, the stunt coordinator, and like 10 stunt players dressed as zombies. And that was awesome. That was living the dream for me.
I'm so pleased you mentioned that. That's my favorite action sequence in the movie.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, no, it's so cool because it's that combination of horror and kick-ass action, like in perfect harmony. Just the bits where it's the flare from the muzzle of the gun that lights up the zombies' faces when you're firing. It's fucking cool, man.
Thank you. Well, the second I read that, I was like, oh, this is so cool. And I came in for work and it was we spent one day choreographing it and rehearsing it over and over and over again. We spent another day shooting it. And I got to do the entire thing myself. The stunt players just like totally laid out for me, made me look like a badass, which was awesome. And I really appreciate that. And that was really, really fun. That was a highlight for me.
So of all the Easter eggs that are hidden in this movie, and there are a lot, was there one that when you saw it, especially as a fan of the game, that you were like, oh, I cannot believe the attention to detail there?
There's a couple. One of them I almost missed was the picture behind me in the dining hall of the knights that where in the game, if you press X on it, it actually like zooms out and describes the photo, the painting. Somebody picked that off day one when the trailer launched on Instagram. I was like, damn, good for you. And then the laboratory, the herbs in the background, the red and green and blue herbs, I was just like, they're never touched, never talked about. I'm just like, this is cool. This is necessary, but it's cool.
Were you not tempted to, I guess being in the movie, you're allowed to do it. Were you not tempted to just go, I'll take a photo of that. I'm going to have that for the memory bank.
I took a photo of the herbs. I think I posted it. Probably shouldn't have, but I posted it. Or I sent it to, I just sent it to like my brother-in-law, two of my buddies. I'm sad I didn't take one of my flak jackets. If we get a sequel, I'll be swiping one of those.
They're very cool. A very good, like, you know, again, another accurate representation of Chris in the game. I mean, yeah. You mentioned like how someone spotted the painting behind you the first time the trailer launched. That sort of level of fan scrutiny, is that sort of on your radar? Are you aware of that? Is it detrimental at all to sort of feel under the microscope when you're playing a role that people are going to be looking for any, I guess, deviation from what they want because they're fans?
I think, you know, I have found that this is all subjective. My business is subjective and you can't please everyone. It's funny. I've done projects that, you know, are great that some people have slammed, and I've done projects that I didn't think were great that some people are like, that's my favorite movie. So I'm like, okay, that was for you then. And that wasn't for you. So the thing about this is I, as a fan of the games, feel really good about what we made. That doesn't mean it's going to be for everybody. There's people who have different ideas of Chris Redfield or Claire Redfield or, you know, anyone from the game, and you can't please everyone, but I feel good about what we made. And at the end of the day, I mean, that's all I can do. Right.
Mm. Yeah. And I think that's probably a healthy way of looking at it. I mean, this, I guess that's what I mean. Like if you are constantly going, oh, but can we do that? Then you probably stop having fun creating a character, which you are owning for the film.
I think the nice thing about it is you get the good and the bad. So there's always going to be trolls. There's always going to be negativity, but you also get the passionate fans who love it and are super, you know, there for it and back it. And, you know, those voices you hope are louder than the others.
Yeah. And I think that's the best way of looking at it. I think it is. So we've not really touched on the zombies in this movie, but I think it is worth noting them because there's like you mentioned fast zombies earlier. You got your World War Z zombies, like you said, the 28 Day Later zombies. You got your classic George Romero zombies, the slow zombies. These zombies are slightly different, though. Johannes has done something different with these zombies, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think they're a heightened version of the video game. The regular zombies, and then the liquor. The liquor's pretty spot on. Like the liquor is straight out of the video game. But I mean, the zombies, the problem if you make them too slow is it can feel a little easy. Like, you know, the video game is very close quarters. So, but you can still run by zombies at times. And it would be a pretty boring movie if you could always just run by a zombie and not really have to worry about it. So I think there are liberties you have to take just from a filmmaking standpoint to keep the stakes high, keep the danger high. And I think that Johannes did a really good job with that. I mean, the tone never felt anti the games to me at all. Mm. It always felt like it was games first, but still, you know, made sure that it felt like a movie. Because at the end of the day, we got to entertain. Mm.
And there's something that I quite liked is the fact that, you know, you see a lot of zombie movies where someone's bitten and then bang, they're a zombie within 5 minutes. But in this, the townsfolk of Raccoon City are sort of slowly becoming zombies. And the reason I found that truly horrific is because you can still see the humanity in them. Like when they're at the police station gates, it's like a person knowing they're turning into a zombie and unable to do anything about it. How dark is that?
It's so dark and it's sad, but it's, again, it's that thing where it's like, it adds another layer. It grounds it a little bit. It makes you feel a little more. Humanizing things, I think, is a big part of this movie versus the video game. And I think that's what makes you care more about the people you're watching.
I loved it. One of the reference points I had in my head was John Carpenter's The Fog. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it's like this really, like, it's a slow building sense of dread in this film. But there are moments of levity provided by yourself and Evan Jogia, which is nice. I mean, you're obviously a great comic actor. I was a huge fan of Upload, by the way. I thought it was fantastic.
Thanks.
When it comes to bringing humor to something like this, how tricky is it? Because obviously, you know, you do want to add a bit of levity, but at the same time, you know, you can't dilute the horror.
You know who I thought did a great job? It's not a horror show, but it was a very dark show, was Breaking Bad. Breaking Bad had humor that made the drama and the danger just hit that much harder. And I think the fact that the movie takes place in the 90s helps with an innate charm and a place to use levity in the music and in like the Palm Pilot, just the silliness of like him playing Snake on his phone, like shit like that, where it's not laugh out loud funny, but it is, you're right, it's a certain amount of levity which helps with everything else. Those lighter moments make the darker moments hit that much harder.
Yeah, you backfoot the audience so they're like, they relax, and then whammy, there's the liquor. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Robbie. Congratulations on the movie. I very much enjoyed it, and I think it's going to make a lot of fans very, very happy.
I hope so. Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, no worries. You have a great rest of your day. Take care.
You too. Also, Upload's coming out in February-ish.
Oh, shit. Really?
Yeah, we finished the second season. I just watched it. 7 episodes. It's really, really, really great. The finale is, if you thought the finale of season 1 was good, wait till you see the finale of season 2.
Mate. Oh, I can't wait. Thank you for doing my job for me and answering a question that I didn't ask. That's really good to hear. I love that. Thank you very much, Robbie. You take care, buddy.
Thank you. You too.
Hello, Alex Zane here. Thank you for choosing to listen to Just the Facts. And while you can still enjoy these episodes forever, you might want to check out our brand new show, A Trip to the Movies, where each week a different famous film fan curates their perfect night out at the cinema, picking what snacks they'd eat, where they'd sit, who they'd go with, and of course, what movies they'd screen. If you love cinema as much as we do, search A Trip to the Movies with Alex Zane or head to our socials at Trip to Movies Pod. That's at Trip to Movies Pod to find out more.